Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Ho, 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 Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Here we are today. We're going to be interviewing Sleepwalker, who is a very important fixture in the Quake community.
Sleepwalker is the lead developer on Trench Broom, which is the newest, latest, greatest map editor for Quake.
And on top of that, we're also going to learn a little bit more about some of the other things that Sleepwalker has brought to the community that everybody uses pretty much every day and may not know that he's responsible for. But before we get to Sleepwalker, I just wanted to wish everybody a happy holiday. And of course, if you're looking for more holiday spirit with a little bit of monster killing mixed in, don't forget that the 2018 Xmas Map Jam has taken place for Quake and is now available, and it's awesome. Definitely check it out.
I played Doom before I played Quake a lot. Like, I guess I played it every day since it came out until Quake came out. So I was really into Doom. And what attracted me to Quake was, I got my hands on it. Back then it was on floppy disks. And, I loaded it up in my computer. And, I was immediately blown away by the visuals and by the 3D room over room possibilities and by the gameplay. And I played it a lot for the following 2 years until Quake 2 came out. Then I switched to that because back then, and kind of still, I'm a lot into sci-fi, and it took me back a bit to the setting of Doom, which I still loved back then.
So you're a Strog lover.
Yeah, kind of. But I got to say, I grew out of it. I got back into Quake a couple years later. So Quake 2 was the first game I played online. And the first game I downloaded maps for, and the first game I actually made some maps for myself using Worldcraft and later Radiant. And through the a mapping community that back then was basically centered around the Q board, which was started by Hatshot of Dapak fame. I met a lot of people, and Hatshot himself, who's from Germany, back then from Hamburg. I lived close to Hamburg, so we saw each other a couple times, and he turned me on to Quake 1 because he was a huge fan of Quake 1. So we played a lot of Quake 1 in his office. And later when I joined them to work in that office, we played even more. So then I was a Quake 1 player. I actually also did a Quake 1 map in 2001. That was a deathmatch thing. Yeah, and then came the whole single player thing because the deathmatch kind of died off for me.
So going back real quick, did I hear you right? You said that you started mapping for Quake 2?
Yeah, I did. I released three deathmatch maps for Quake 2. They were called Rapid Eye Movement, Deus Ex Machina, and the last one was called Pain Elemental. And
okay.
That was
well, it's very cool because I noticed sort of a theme throughout the community is that everybody loves Quake 1. They hate Quake 2. They move on to Quake 3, and they're like, Quake 3 is okay. But it's just funny to hear that you sort of got your start, you know, actually developing mapping, doing that kind of stuff with Quake 2. That's kind of unique.
Yeah, I guess, kind of. But back then, it was a very active community, too. Like, there was a lot of Quake 2 stuff, especially also from the prolific Quake 1 mappers, like back then, Headshot and Sten, I think, and a couple others who did great Quake 2 maps as well. And I mean, it gets a lot of shit, Quake 2, and maybe for a reason. But I always found it also fun to play in deathmatch because of the railgun. That was just a fun weapon to me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I actually really liked Quake 2's deathmatch personally. So I played the hell out of that.
Yeah, it was fun.
As far as Quake 2 on my end, I played the hell out of it. I was on a mod team for it. I did sound design. I didn't do any mapping for Quake. I did a little bit of mapping, just box rooms and things. So I enjoyed the release and everything, but to me, I just kind of stepped away because, Quake 3 just grabbed me and was kind of more my style. But yeah, I've always appreciated it. And I do go back to it every once in a while and go, some of these levels are really clever and really fun. And that definitely has a much larger scale. I think people forget that you have these, Quake is a kind of almost a corridor shooter. And then they really opened things up with Quake 2 and got a sense of scope that they never had in the other. Well, maybe not Doom notwithstanding, but the sense of scope in Quake was pretty limited. So now as far as making tools and things and doing, programming for the community, did that come much later or did you dabble in things early on?
I dabbled a little because I started mapping with Worldcraft and I was very much put off by the necessity to always keep switching tools in Worldcraft. Like you have this toolbar and even if you just want to move the camera, at least in the version that I had, you had to switch the camera tool and that just felt so clunky. So I looked at other editors and I landed on Radiant, which was back then, I think, Quake 2 only. And so when I made my Quake 1 deathmatch map, I wanted to keep using Radiant. So I built a little conversion tool that also a lot of other people seemed to use. It was written in Java. It was really clunky and slow. But what it did was just it took a Quake 2 map and converted it into a Quake 1 map. And so that was the first kind of tool thing that I did for Quake. And then...
Cool.
That was... must have been in like 2000 or something. And I don't know if it's still around somewhere. I don't think anyone would still use it. but maybe you could find it for historical purposes. I don't know.
Well, I think you've kind of turned a corner and kind of made a significant impact with your other piece of software that we'll get to. But, so I wouldn't feel bad about that. But it is, you'd be surprised. We'll probably be able to dig that thing up. So now, and I'm kind of a nerd about that stuff, so I'll have to go searching.
I hope it's just the binary and not the source code, though.
Well, you get a free pass if it's Java. It's all right.
Okay.
Everyone knows how tough that is, right?
Yeah.
So let's segue to Trench Broom. So I found it really surprising that Trench Broom kind of had its genesis, 8 years ago. I kind of see it as, just in my myopic view is that, it's only been around for, 4 or 5 years, but I didn't realize until recently how old it is and what the development path. I know the current iteration is more recent, but do you want to talk about the history of that? Just touch upon that for people, listeners who don't know the history of Trench Broom. And actually, you should probably explain a little bit about Trench Broom as well, just in case people are coming to this fresh.
Right. Okay. Well, so first of all, Trench Broom is a level editing program for multiple games at this point, all based on the Quake heritage of engines. So currently it supports Quake 1, Quake 2, Hexen 2, and I think some people have also... Oh, it also supports Daikatana.
Yay! Cool.
And
people have been clamoring for that for a while.
Yeah, I know.
Person has been clamoring for that.
but the thing is with Daikatana, I kind of coming from the Quake community, I have kind of a heart for small communities, for obscure games. So I guess, when they asked me, and I also thought like, this will be a 2-day job. It turned out to take a lot longer, but anyway, so Trench Broom is the, is a level editing program that, at this point is developed by Eric Vasilishin. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't really know, but everyone knows him under Eric W. And me. But initially I did it alone, and the inception of Trench Broom, that happened in 2010, but I think I have to go a little back further to 2008, I think. That was when I wrote my diploma thesis. And for that, I needed to learn OpenGL. And so I did that, and I wanted to do a little more. So what I did next was, I have to go back even further to 2006, because that's when I switched to the Macintosh. And and so I wanted to play Quake on a map, on a Mac, and I wanted to learn more OpenGL. I also wanted to learn C and C++. I came from Java originally. And so what I did back then was I ported FitzQuake to the SDL, which is a library that you can use for cross-platform games. And because I wanted to play like the latest releases on the Mac. And that later turned into Quake Spasm, I think. I think it was picked up by the Quake Spasm team, and they used that as a base for Quake Spasm. But that happened.
That's
much.
Amazing. That's great.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. I was like super happy that someone picked that up. And yeah, and then so that was 2008, the SDL port. And then two years down the road, I was always wanting to get back into mapping. And I could never find a level editing program that did what I wanted, basically Radiant on a Mac. GTK Radiant was around back then, I think, but it was quite clunky on the Mac. Yeah, it didn't work very well. I'm not sure if it's better at this point, but I suppose so. I think they improved the Mac support. Anyway, the only thing back then that was around and halfway modern was a program called ToeTag by this guy Taskmaster, who later went under the nickname Willem. I don't think he's still around in the Quake community, but he's still like around on Twitter. He's a 3D freelance 3D artist, I think. Mm-hmm. And so he did this thing, ToeTag, which I tried, but it wasn't for me. It worked pretty well, but it wasn't for me. So I decided to roll my own. And that was in 2010. And initially it was supposed to be Mac only. So it was written in Objective-C. And I released it, I think, in 2011 or 12 to like a user base of like two or three people. There was really not much going on in Quake for Mac back then. And I also announced it on the Funk community, and people looked at the screenshots and I think I did a video or something, and everyone liked it, and everyone was like, "Well, we need this for Windows or for Linux, and please port it." And I was like, "Nah, I have no time for that." But I gave in, and then I think in 2012 I started porting it to cross-platform. With the help of this guy who called himself Necros. I think he's pretty famous for his maps, and he helped me out a lot with the interface, like with suggestions and like hammering out the basically the user interface and the interaction, basically the UX design, I think you call it now. It's like the user experience.
User experience, yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, and then that developed and turned into Trench Broom 1, which was released, I don't know, I forget, like 2014 maybe. And it turned out that, this was my first project in C++, and it turned out I made some mistakes. And I thought it would be a good idea to just start afresh and do Trench Broom 2 as a complete rewrite. That was like, I think the worst decision I've made. For this entire project, because it took, I don't know, much longer, I think 2 or 3 years to finish that. And it was, it was really exhausting, that process. And I think if you look at...
I bet it was. I do remember back in the day, everybody saying, like, I cannot wait for 2.0 to come out, and it was a pretty long wait.
Yeah. It almost turned to vaporware, I think. But if you look at the GitHub activity for my contributions to Trench Broom, you can see these graphs, and you will see that there are these slumps where I did basically nothing because I was sometimes so turned off by it, because it was just so much work to get back to where I was with Trench Room 1. But anyway, in the end, it turned out fine, and it had a nice reception in the community, and which I find almost more important, even outside of the community. There was an article written on Rock Paper Shotgun that made a lot of people aware of Trench Room, and it brought in a lot of people also when John Carmack was nice enough to tweet about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, what a great feeling, huh? Having Carmack actually tweet about your program, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I'm sure he gets a lot of asks, so that one rose to the top. That's super impressive. I mean, to me, it's not surprising at all because, it really is a great piece of software, and it's modern, yeah. And it feels right. You know, there's so many things to gush about. And it just keeps getting better too, which is great. So, and it's that bittersweet thing because now I know you can't map anymore. I've read that a few times from you, and you don't have as much time on your hands to do the thing you love. And the whole reason Trench Broom existed, but it kind of has grown outside of, you know, the original intention, which was really kind of just for you, something you wanted to do.
Yeah. But I think it's one of these things where I don't know how to put this, where, you know, you start wanting something and then you do something and it turns into something else. And then you don't really want the original thing anymore. I think I've tried to make a map over the years in Trench Broom because I was thinking, you know, you got to eat your own dog food and whatnot, and you wanted to map. But I have to say that the mapping bug did not really bite me again. It was always like, man, if I had this feature now, that would be really useful. So why don't I code it up? And so it always turned into me programming new features or fixing a bug. So I guess that says something about my priorities now. I just like to program more than I like mapping. So I think it's fine for everyone.
I think that's an important thing to mention, too, because I do now and then get people who stumble into my Discord and they'll talk about how they're mapping and they feel like they're in a rut or they feel like they have no muse. It would seem to me they just want to create something for Quake. And like I said, I think this is a really great note for people like that who want to create something for Quake. Maybe a map just isn't, you know, really what you want to get into. Maybe you want to get into making some tools or programming or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Please do programming. Please help us. We need help.
He's begging people, help him.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it's very time consuming, and I have very little time to work on it. I try to put in some time every evening, but it doesn't always work out. And even when I'm disciplined about it, I'm just moving quite slowly. Luckily, we have Eric, who's apparently faster than me, or he just has more time. I don't know, but he does great things with Trench Broom. He's just helped out so much. He's fixed so many of the deeply hidden and difficult to fix bugs in the editor. He made it so stable, and he's contributed so many nice features now. So if we can find someone who does even just half the things, then that would be a huge boon to us.
Yeah, I for a short time there, I was kind of going out on social media and trying to drum up support. And it's just one of those things we have to just keep hammering. And I have a feeling that eventually you're going to, you know, someone's going to land on this project. Now, that leads me to another question for you. I've noticed, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm under the impression that I believe that the developers of Dusk have taken a fork of Trench Broom too, and made it their kind of their mod development. And I wish I had more information. I should have done a little more homework. But do you know anything about that? Have you heard the latest on that?
I think it's a little different story. I think what they did was, I think internally in house they use their own tools. I'm not sure if that tool is based on Trench Broom or not. I've never heard about that, but. For their community efforts, I think they suggest to use Trench Broom, and they possibly have a compiler that compiles the Quake maps into something that their engine can digest. But that's basically all I know. Like, it's Trench Broom is like their official community tool, but I'm not sure about their in-house development, though.
Well, I will get out my detective hat and put it on and get more information and update the community when I can.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of intriguing. And I know that their official release is pretty imminent if it isn't already out. So, or no, I guess their new episode is out. That's what it is. But I mean, so it must be satisfying for you to have the success, because I know the response in the community, not everybody has switched over, but I know that quite a few people have switched from older tools to Trench Broom, and even just as recently as QMaster, who's been mapping for a long time and doing modding and stuff, and he's in love. You know, we can see he got that, you know, spark. In fact, Shambler, who was a longtime critic, map critic, and, you know, a fixture in the community, finally jumped into mapping as a result of, you know, getting bitten by the Trench Broom bug. And I'll say, even myself, I've said this before on the show, but I saw Daz's videos and on mapping, and then I was like, oh wow, there's so much going on, these look so fantastic. And then he did a Trench Broom video, or I found a Trench Broom video for 1.0, and I was like, oh my god, I've got to download that. So I raced home that night, downloaded and started mapping, and it's been crazy ever since. I've been involved with the community because of Daz, and a combination of Daz's videos and Trench Broom. So it's your fault.
Well, I'll take the blame for that.
It's the ease of the program also got me to map too. I am not a mapper by any means. If you play my maps, you're like, oh boy. But regardless though, seeing the ease of use with the program and everything, I was like, oh my god, even RC could do this. And if RC could do it, guys, anybody can get in there and start mapping. You got to check out Trench Broom if you haven't already.
Actually, you know, I think this is the feedback that makes me the most happy. It's of course it's satisfying to have like the mentions from Carmack, and it's super satisfying to have people turn to Trench Broom. But when I hear someone who says, like, I had no experience in 3D modeling before, and I picked up the program and I could just start working, because that was the vision for it, that it's easily accessible, that you can at any time just click on things and start interacting, like a lot of the Apple software does. I think they do something right there, and I tried to transport this into Trench Broom, and it seems that it's working. I get the feedback indicates that, so that makes me really happy that this is turning out well.
And you mentioned 3D modeling. You know, I'm sure you know this, but some people are using it as a 3D modeler, like a simple brush based, you know, and then exporting to OBJ and then bringing it elsewhere, you know, to work on it. But so I've even seen that in the Trench Broom Discord as well.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I've seen like, I've seen like all kinds of like funny uses of Trench Broom. But yeah, of course, it's very gratifying if someone prefers Trench Broom to, I don't know, Blender or other more powerful tools.
So now, I know from reading your comments on GitHub and also in the Discord that you have a really specific set of kind of guardrails that you put up, because you, and correct me if I'm wrong, so you'll explain this, but you kind of want to keep it a general tool so that it's more accessible to all these other games down on the horizon. And I know that you only have a two-person team right now, so that what you can accomplish is kind of limited by that. But what do you foresee down the line? Where do you kind of see Trench Broom going? I know the immediate future. You're gonna say, but you know, a few years down the line, if you got this dream team together and people really involved, maybe a team of a half dozen people, what do you see? Where do you see Trench Broom going?
Well, like the first thing, I think that's what you're alluding to, what I was going to say, is I want to support more games to realize this vision of having more developers helping out. Because if we get more people to use Trench Broom, we get a bigger audience, and then we have a better chance of attracting also support from developers. So that would really help. That would really help us. And but I have to say that I don't have like this long-term vision of where I want to go. I have the issue tracker that's full of stuff, that's interesting and probably helpful and fun to do. And whenever I'm like done with a feature, I'll go through the issues and I select something that's either where either I will think, yeah, this is something that we need right now. Like this will help a lot of people out. Like, I don't know. For example, and better support for texture alignment. That was a thing that we needed a couple years ago. So I added the UV editor, which turned out to be quite successful. So it's either that or it's something where I think, okay, this is something that will just like help with some technical debt and make us more stable in the future. So, but basically I have to say I just wing it. I look at something, is it fun to implement? Then I'll do it. Is it quick? Then I'll do it. Or is it important? And then I'll do it.
Right. I was giving, you are very responsive too in Discord and on GitHub. But one thing I do want to follow up though, like I know that you definitely have a philosophy, like you don't want this thing to be too Quake centric, Quake One Quake centric, because you get a lot of, you know, that's your big user base right now. And you get a lot of asks and feature requests are really kind of super specific things to Quake. And I know you push back a little bit. And I'm sure you have your reasons, but I'm just wondering, do you have like these guardrails? Like, no, I want this to be a generalized tool.
Oh.
Or is that just, I mean, where does that kind of come from?
Yes, I want it to be generalized for Quake engines. I'm not aiming at something beyond that. I'm not aiming at a generalized 3D tool, but I wanted to be able to support as many Quake engine based games as possible. And for that, I just have to, avoid falling into the trap of making it too specific to one particular game. Because the thing is, if I do something that's specific for one game, I always have to think about it in a more abstract way. Like I have to think about how can we lift it to a level of abstraction where it applies to multiple games. Take, for example, Quake 3 support, which involves supporting patches, like these curve-like shapes that you can do in Quake 3. They were novel to the Quake 3 engine, so they're not available in Quake 1 or Quake 2. But what I'm thinking about is like, how can we make it so abstract that these things that you can define and edit in the editor then can be used in Quake 1 and Quake 2 as well? So maybe there's a way to turn them into brushes, like a basically a smooth curve generator that will approximate the patch using brushes. And I always have to make like these this mental leap. And if I just don't see a feature being able, like if I can't make this abstraction, or if I think that it's just too much work for such a special little thing, then I will usually say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. At least not now, maybe later when we know more about other games, and maybe then it's a more general thing. But I try to keep it like, yeah, as abstract as possible to avoid being too specific to one game, because that just makes it so difficult to add support for other games as well.
Right. And I think it bears out that you've prioritized and really kind of focused on the things that matter. And I kind of look at it as like, you know best right now. The proof is in the pudding, right? So RC, take it away. You have some questions.
Yeah, I just have two for you here, Sleepwalker. When we were talking about plans for the future, I was wondering, what is the most requested game that doesn't have support yet? What is what people want to see?
Quake 3 and derivatives, like I think the Zonotic engine and other Quake 3 based games. It's for sure it's Quake 3. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I could definitely see that for sure, which is really cool. It would be awesome to see people, because I know that over on Level, they still release Quake 3 maps pretty frequently during the year, but it would be awesome to get some more new blood in that too. It would be really cool. So the other question I had for you as well, I know you touched on earlier talking about how creating Trench Broom 2 might have been one of the most difficult parts of the development for Trench Broom. But besides that, just based on the regular development of the tool, what was the biggest hurdle for you?
I think the biggest hurdle for me is always myself because I try to I do this mostly because I want to learn things. So I wanted to learn C++, so I wrote Trench Broom. I wanted to learn more about OpenGL, and I just want to improve my craft, which is programming. So I always strive to make the code as nice as possible, as fast as possible, and whatnot. And sometimes, you know, this kind of perfectionism that I like to apply to the Trench Broom code base is something that you can only afford in private projects, not in commercial ones, unless you're working at NASA or whatever.
Right.
And that can become a hurdle because it's quite time consuming. Sometimes you just have to jump in and code it up. But if you're like me, then think too much about it, then that can be a hurdle. And I would say that the most difficult thing and the most time-consuming thing that I had to work on in Trench Broom was the CSG subtraction feature, which originally I wanted to be like, I wanted the results to be as if a mapper had done it by hand. And that means that it would add as few vertices to the remaining brushes as possible. It's hard to describe, but it's a surprisingly difficult problem. I've worked on it for 1.5 years, and wow. I never got it right. Like, I did release a version that had it for Trench Broom 2, but it failed on some situations. So in the end, I just decided, okay, enough is enough. I wasted enough time on this, but I still think about it. I still want to make it happen at some point. But that was like the most difficult thing.
And it is fairly clean in its current iteration, right? I mean, you covered some ground there.
But that was Eric. I was shooting myself in the foot repeatedly over the years. And then he came along and said, you know, why make it so hard for yourself? Like, here's a solution that's much easier and it creates good results, as you just pointed out. And I've already got it. So let's merge this. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. Let's go.
That's going to be hard. But, you know, good for you. You know, and also, you know, we're all, you had said it before, you're learning to be a better programmer. Well, so he had a different perspective, you know, and you learned something, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working in any kind of creative space, whether programming, art, whatever it is, you got to be open to not only critique, but also open to other ideas. Cause I find that's one thing with developers that I've talked to and I've worked with in the past is that they're very, very headstrong. They do not want their code to be any different from how they developed it. And sometimes it's like, hey, let this other guy kind of just work with you and you guys will work together and come up with a great solution. Like it sounds like you guys did there.
Yeah. Yeah. That is something that I think I already learned a couple years ago in my day job, where I have to work with other programmers as well. It's just, you have to leave your ego at the door if you want to really become a better programmer. Because I'm a good programmer, but there's a lot of people out there who are better than me, and I'd rather learn from them than be a dick about my own code, to be honest.
So here's what I'll say is I would love to have you back on once Quake 3 support or the Quake 3 engine support comes in or once you solve those, you know, those abstracts that you're struggling with, because, you know, just personally, selfishly, I'm looking forward to making Quake 3 maps. I may not even publish anything. It may not be even something I release to the world, but I do enjoy kind of compiling a Quake 3 map and dropping a few bots in, and just instantly I'll get caught up and spend an hour playing my own map. And one of the maps that I made for Quake 1 was a deathmatch map called Rubicon, and it's not a big release. Nobody knows where it is. It's probably not even out there, but it's a really interesting design, and I know that it translates to Quake 3 because I ported it over to Quake 3, but I never finished it. And it was always a mess. So I want to start from scratch, take the same design and make a new level. And originally that's what I was going to do with Quake 1, but I've just never gotten to that because so few people play Deathmatch. I'm hoping, like I say, selfishly, to kind of make some Quake 3 levels and possibly even kind of mess around with Call of Duty United Offensive and some of those things that I had mapped for before, like Soldier Fortune 2, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how much I'll be able to contribute because I'm not super technical guy. If I could program, I certainly would be helping you guys. But I might be able to make some game config files for those games that I mentioned just to try and dabble and go, oh, yeah, I remember this. It's great, you know, because some of those games just are fun to go back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of requests for some of the games that you mentioned, like Soldier of Fortune. There's already, like, I think someone already did some work on that, like provided FGD files. I just haven't gotten around to integrating it properly into Trench Broom.
Yeah, and I think the trouble for you is so for Soldier Fortune 1 and for Soldier Fortune 2, that the model formats are definitely different. Those Raven kind of upgraded those engines' model formats to do the gore system, for example, where you could shoot someone's arm off and things like that. So I would imagine that's part of the challenge for you for supporting these things. So with Daikatana, where was the challenge there to add that support? Was it the model format, or what kind of things were giving you trouble?
Yeah, it was a number of things. There was, for one, there was the pack files are different and they have compression, so you have to implement that. Then the model format is different. That's also true. The texture format is different, then they have this weird. It's like, as far as I understand it, Daikatana is basically like four games in one, and each game is like one episode. And it has like a different palette and different models, and it all depends on like what episode it is in. I think there are models that change depending on the episode also. And Trench Room does not support all of this 100%, but all of these things combined just made it a little difficult. And of course, there's also very few resources online available. For example, there's no documentation of the model format, and I've had some help from the Daikatana community, and found some source code, and then cobbled the pieces together. So yeah, that's what.
Well, that's impressive. Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it's like a detective work, just trying to track any kind of information down on some of these more obscure titles. Like, I was blown away that someone was making maps for, and I think it was a Trench Broom. Someone doing Trench Broom a while ago for Anachronox, which I love that game. That was a fun game. I never finished that game. I got to go back and finish that thing. But I was like, wow, people are making content for Anachronox. What a trip.
Yeah, true. I've read that somewhere as well.
Well, so let's transition to kind of more generalized Quake stuff, because one question I wanted to ask was, now, do you host or are you involved with hosting Funk Message Board? Did someone said that? I don't know if that's true, or Quaketastic, one of these kind of integral websites.
Yeah, I host the Funk Message Board and Quaketastic. I have I'm renting a server together with another friend I made in the Quake community. His handle is Gom Jabbar. He's also a Quake 1 deathmatch mapper. And like, we share the costs. It's not expensive. We have the space, we have the bandwidth. And so I offered at some point to host these sites, because then I can be sure that they don't disappear. The thing is that I'm really unhappy about is that all of the old Quake mapping boards have disappeared without a trace. The Q board is gone. There's no backup from it. I got headshot to look through all his old backups, and he didn't find one. Peach and Frips has disappeared. QMap has disappeared, and there are no backups. Like, I asked the guys for it. So I offered to John Metal Slime to host the board for free, because then I can make sure that there are regular backups, which are taking place every night, and that it doesn't go away. And the same for Quaketastic.
Well, I'm clapping right now, because I'm glad I asked, because I didn't know all that and the specifics of it. And I got to say, for Quake mappers, this is such an important resource. And obviously you recognize that, and you have very good reasons to kind of host it. And that's very generous of you, first of all. So I just want to thank you as a Quake mapper for sure. But I mean, people forget there are, and I could be wrong, we're close to 20,000 posts in the mapping help, just the mapping help subject. There's 20,000 posts there over the years.
Yeah.
And the wealth of knowledge for someone who's coming back, or first of all, coming in new to it, or someone like myself who had mapped back in 96 and, you know, went away from it for a while. The wealth of information there, and I still have to look things up almost weekly, just on Funk message board. So, and right now there's a little bit of conversation in Discord about, you know, the demise of Funk message board, you know, oh, everybody's over in Discord, yada, yada. And and I totally understand the pushback, but I see Funk as the place where you want to put evergreen information. You know, if you're posting a map, that's where you're going to put it. I always post everything that I do as far as videos and things on Funk message board. So I see it as the permanent residence. And then, you know, Discord's just where the audience is right now. You know, that's where the people who are doing mapping work are. So,
yeah, I agree. These are different things. And it's also something that you cannot control. Like Discord is useful and it's easy and people are going to use it. And if it turns out to be a mistake or it doesn't work anymore, or they start, I don't know, charging for it or whatever, then it will migrate back to IRC or elsewhere. I don't know. But I think it's just something that happens. People go where it's easy and they will go elsewhere if it becomes too hard. And one thing I want to add about the Funk message board, though, is it's for me, like, it's also a self-serving thing because I love this community. I really do. Like, I've spent... I just had to remember when you asked me for my bio information. I think I've been around this community for 20 years now. I've never been, never been a very active part of it, but I've always been around, always read all the posts, played all the maps and whatnot. And yeah, it's just a great place with great people. And I just want to contribute and keep it around just for me.
That's fantastic, though. I mean, good for us. You know, it's a huge contribution. It can't for people who are listening who don't know Funk Message Board. Boy, it's just vast. The amount of conversations that have occurred over those 20 years. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. For better or for worse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. There's the beef thread, which is always entertaining to go to. So if you haven't checked out the beef thread, you should definitely go.
Oh, man. Check it out. But really, I mean, this community has become so tame and so nice. You have no idea about the wars that have gone on back then. Oh, man. Oh, man.
I can imagine.
It was awful.
I just want a kindler, gentler Quake.
where Shub kind of takes your hand and guides you, you know, instead of exactly. The opposite.
One of its many hands, I guess.
Right. Yes. One of its tentacles even.
And its goat hooves and things like that. Well, let's talk about gaming life. I mean, I know that you're a dad and it's tough to, you know, get time to game. But when you do, what do you play?
Well, sadly, not enough Quake. I have to admit, I haven't played all of the releases like for the past 2 years. I've only played selective stuff like obviously Arcane Dimensions, but a lot of other stuff I didn't have the time to play it, but I plan on at some point playing them all again.
But, or you could watch RC play them. That's another option because he plays almost everything that comes out now.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, it's a time thing. Like, I could watch RC, but which I'm sure is enjoyable, but then I could use the time to play. But for me, it's always the choice: do I play do I do something, or do I work on Trench Broom? And very mm-hmm. often, Trench Broom just wins because it's more fun. But
yeah, I'll be the first to say that's the better idea than watching my show.
Well, and apart from Quake, like when I get the time, I like to play, for example, the Tomb Raider reboot because It has a, to me, it has a great sense of exploration. I just like to explore things, and I usually play it on easy as well, because I just like to run around, explore things, and find all the secrets. That's very, very well done in these games, in my opinion.
I agree. I actually really like, I haven't played the newest one that just came out, but the first two I really liked.
Yeah. The latest one is also great. It's a bit different. It's a bit like, it's quite long. The levels are bigger, which is sometimes like, sometimes it comes a bit of a, it becomes a bit of a chore, but it's still fun. It's like, it looks great. It feels great. And it has nice puzzles. So yeah, I can recommend it.
That's great. And I've got one of them sitting on my hard drive. And when you said that, I'm like, I got to play that thing. I got to sit down and play. I'm just in the mode right now where I'm creating a lot of content. And so my spare time is really limited, but I hear you. And listen, don't feel guilty for not playing a bunch of maps, because, you know, I'm on the boards every day. And what I told RC before is that I just kind of focus on playing new mappers work so that I can give feedback. Sometimes people reach out to me because of the tutorials, and I'll want to make sure and be attentive to them. You know, so I do kind of choose newer mappers over some more established people. And so I've missed all kinds of stuff. Although I will say, if you haven't played, what's going to be released today, but it'll be well into release by the time this airs, the Christmas Jam 2018 is really great. So definitely you'll want to play, at least a few of those maps are pretty astounding.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I want to play every Quake map is that I'm always blown away by the creativity of the Quake mappers. Like, and everyone, I don't just mean like the big names, like, I don't know, Simon or MFX or whatever, like the guys that you know. But also the newcomers, and the more obscure mappers, they all bring something unique to the table, and I just enjoy it so much that here's a bunch of people who have this playing field that's, you know, compared to current games is pretty limited, and they will use every resource available to them. They will tie it all together to create something fantastic in almost every map. So that's just so much fun. That's why I love playing Quake maps.
I agree.
So Sleepwalker, it says here that you you live in Berlin with your family. Are you born and raised there? Have you always lived in Berlin?
No, I haven't. I was born in northern Germany in a town called Neumünster that probably no one knows. It's just a small town, and like I basically grew up outside mostly until I got my first computer. And I lived there, and I lived a couple places over the years, but moved to Berlin in 2001 and just stayed here because it's so nice.
That's great. I actually had a couple of friends visit Berlin this past summer. They had nothing but nice things to say about the area there. They loved it.
Yeah. We have a lot of your friends. Like, there's a lot of tourists in Berlin. A lot of people complain about it. I usually don't. But it's nice. It's a nice international city with people from all over the world coming to it also permanently, like at work. I think 80% of my colleagues are from, we're not born in Germany, and it's just great. It just makes for so much input and so much interesting things to learn.
That's great. So you actually have a pretty diverse workforce there then.
Yeah, we do. Like, I don't know, we have people from Russia, from India, from and other countries that I can't name right now because I'm blanking out.
It says here that you're actually into reading sci-fi, watching TV shows. What kind of sci-fi do you read? What shows do you like?
I can tell you about the most recent sci-fi books I've read. So the most recent sci-fi book I've read is called Diaspora. Or Diaspora, I don't know how to spell it, like to pronounce it in English. It's a novel about, like, it's set in the far future of mankind, where most of mankind has migrated into computers. So it's about mind uploading. And
oh, okay.
And it's very interesting because it takes that idea pretty far. Like how, for example, like if you upload a mind to the computer, how can you ensure that there is some kind of evolution taking place? So they talk about how they create like new minds from existing minds in a like DNA-like fashion, where they combine information from two minds with random information. So that's kind of a hard sci-fi, I guess, that I read there.
Yeah, it's pretty deep.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's a book that I would recommend, even though I did not always enjoy reading it, but it's it just provokes a lot of ideas, I think. So I really like that. And well, what else? What TV shows do I like? My favorite TV show of all time is surely Battlestar Galactica, the reboot from 2004. I just loved that show when it came out, and I watched it multiple times since then. And more recently, I've been watching or rewatching actually The Expanse, which is a sci-fi show about, also set, of course, in the future, where the humankind has spread out over the solar system. There are different factions that are competing for resources and for power. And then like a new thing shows up in the solar system that is clearly of alien origin. And no one really knows what it is, and it looks like a weapon and whatnot. And yeah, that's a very, very interesting show. Also very political, like Battlestar was. And the most fun part about it is that you watch three seasons of it, and then in the end of the third season, it turns into something completely different. And the first three seasons just seem like the prelude.
That's really cool. Yeah, that sounds really fascinating. Actually, I might seek that one out myself. I'm an old Star Trek, you know, fan. I was born, you know, right after Star Trek, the original series came out, and watched quite a bit of Next Generation. And to me, that's like TV sci-fi. So it's funny, I don't really watch a lot of sci-fi. I should branch out and kind of seek new things, but that sounds really great.
Yeah, I'm just into that kind of stuff. I guess I talk too much about it too.
No, that's fine. So Sleepwalker, we always end with a question about advice for people getting into your line of work. So since you're not in the gaming industry, but you are a software developer, what advice would you give to people that are seeking to break into that field?
I think, I studied computer science, and I think that is a good course, like a good course of action if you want to get into programming, is to study computer science, but it's not like a total necessity. I think the most important thing is to find a project that you like working on and work on it, just to practice practice and learn things, and also to look at other people's code. But most importantly, just do it. Even if you're studying computer science, do something on the side and practice your craft, because it takes years to become a good programmer, and then even more years to become better. And it's, to me, the best way to become a better programmer is to program as much as you can.
I want to thank you on behalf of the community for all you've done, because you're very humble about it, and it's a testament to your humility and your kind of hands-off approach that I didn't know that you hosted these sites and what the reasoning were for Funk Message Board and everything. But thank you from the community, because it's really important. The stuff that you're doing with the development and with the websites is just really tremendous. So thank you.
Well, everyone's welcome, and I'm just doing it for fun, so.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.